It is 5:20, and this is the KDLL Evening News for Friday, December 26, on 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. Filling in for Ashlyn O'Hara, I'm Jake Dye. Thanks for tuning in. Coming up, Governor Mike Dunleavy has named two appointees to the Alaska House of Representatives. But first, for decades, Alaska officials have dreamed of a pipeline that would ferry natural gas hundreds of miles from the North Slope to an export terminal in Cook Inlet. Over the years, the state has pumped hundreds of millions of dollars into designing and permitting for the project, which is estimated to cost tens of billions of dollars to construct. While President Trump has framed the pipeline as a centerpiece to his plans for unleashing the country's energy, there are many questions surrounding the megaproject, including whether there's a large enough market for the gas it would carry and what kind of environmental impact it could have. Reporter Lois Parshley recently wrote about the project for the nonprofit news outlet Grist. She told Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early that despite many backers saying the time to build the pipeline is now, there's still a lot of skepticism.
The short answer is there isn't yet much hard evidence that this project will pay off at the scale that's being promised. To start, there are no binding long-term contracts with overseas buyers. The costs for steel and construction have continued to rise, and global LNG markets are becoming more competitive and uncertain as countries accelerate a transition away from fossil fuels. So there's a big question about whether this project is economically viable, and if it does move forward anyway, if Alaska will face cost overruns that leave both state ratepayers and federal taxpayers on the hook.
So Glen Farne is the company that's set to operate the pipeline, and they've also received a lot of state support. What does the public actually know about the state's dealings with Glen Farne, and what's their background in pipeline management?
Very little, but that's a great question. Glen Farne Group is a privately held energy firm that has no experience to date operating a liquefied natural gas export terminal. They were given a 75% stake in the project by the state in a no-bid contract whose details have been kept even from the state legislature. And Glen Farne has said that they don't plan to release updated estimates of the project's costs.
Is there any reason why they're not releasing that to the public, or why legislators are having such trouble?
So far, both Glen Farne Group and the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation have cited confidentiality agreements and claimed these are trade secrets.
And you write that Glen Farne stands to reap a lot of financial benefit from the pipeline, even if it isn't built. How does that work?
Yeah, so Glen Farne could make a lot of money even if a mile of pipe is never laid. The company now owns permits, engineering work, and other assets that give it leverage in future deals within the state or in qualifying for federal support. For example, Nat Hertz's great reporting showed recently that Glen Farne is working with the private utility NSTAR to develop plans to import liquefied natural gas that overlaps with other existing utility projects, potentially raising costs for ratepayers while laying the groundwork for their export facility. One expert nationally recently noted in a public comment on LNG export terminals that this kind of leverage is pretty typical, and that insiders like Glen Farne can, quote, take fees and bonuses and profit even if projects like these fail.
So the pipeline has run into pushback from a surprising group of entities, local energy utilities. What is their concern with the project?
So utilities, especially in South Central Alaska, face dwindling energy supplies, natural gas in Cook Inlet, which has historically provided most of the state's supply, have become unprofitable to extract. And as a result, utilities have been warning that the region could face rolling blackouts. So this supply crunch is one that Glen Farne argues can only be solved in the long term by the pipeline. But a lot of the people I spoke to said that the pipeline won't actually solve this affordability crisis. without foreign buyers, the pipeline is going to be overbuilt. And the Alaska Utilities Working Group wrote in a report that current natural gas demand in Alaska simply does not support a pipeline project. Many of Alaska's power plants aren't currently set up to run off natural gas, and converting them will cost money. These are existing assets. And many of the experts I spoke to suggest that the cost of energy from any LNG pipeline would likely be higher than just importing gas.
Well, assuming the gas line never gets built, besides the wasted public funds, which are pretty significant, why else should Alaskans care?
I would argue that all Americans should care. The U.S. is now the world's largest LNG exporter prior to this project being built, and the industry is increasingly built on debt, not demand. Analysts warn that the LNG sector may be approaching a bubble, and investors writ large are exposed to climate risks and these weakening markets. One recent report, which was quite alarming, warned that declining credit quality could lead to debt packaging similar to the 2008 mortgage crisis. So as one source told me, every taxpayer should be furious that the federal government is chasing this project.
So this push to sort of kickstart this natural gas pipeline in Alaska, it comes kind of at the expense of other renewable energy projects. How is that squaring away?
That's a great question. As you noted, Trump has cut more than $1 billion for Alaskan renewable projects, including pretty significant ones near Fairbanks and Anchorage. And sources have told me that this leaves Alaskans vulnerable to volatile energy price hikes. Senator Bill Wielichowski told me that this basically creates what he calls a hostage situation, where Alaskans are forced to develop fossil fuels at whatever price companies want to charge.
Lois Partially is a reporter with Grist. Her story can be found on their website, www.grist.org. And finally, Governor Mike Dunleavy has chosen two MATSU Republicans to fill vacant state House seats. In a statement Wednesday, Dunleavy announced the appointment of Wasilla resident Steve St. Clair and Sutton resident Garrett Nelson to the state House of Representatives. Both seats were vacated when George Rauscher of Sutton and Kathy Tilton of Wasilla were chosen by the governor to fill two vacancies in the Senate. Republican Senators Mike Schauer and Shelley Hughes both vacated their seats to focus on gubernatorial campaigns, Schauer for lieutenant governor and Hughes for governor. Nelson will replace Rauscher as a representative of House District 29. He's currently the chair of the Sutton Community Council and has lived in the area for 7 years, according to the governor's statement. St. Clair will fill Tilton's seat representing House District 26. Officials with the governor's office say St. Clair is a retired military police officer who's lived in Wasilla for 15 years. Both Nelson and St. Clair will have to be approved by a majority of House Republicans in order to be confirmed. Alaska's next legislative session begins on January 20th of next year. That's all for tonight's KDLL Evening News. We had help from Wesley Early in Anchorage. You can re-listen to this newscast and find our other stories online at kdll.org. I'm Jake Dye. Have a great night.